You're listening to Game Play on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Game Play. I am your host, Matthew Kaz. We are on the precipice of the final weekend of the NFL season, and the theme throughout the show today is be careful. Don't be a dummy like me, where you've got to bet or at least predict, give his thoughts, his prognostications on every NFL game, because there is going to be news between now and the first kickoff on Saturday. There were players coming in, players coming out, players playing a quarter, scoreboard watching, wait a minute, what's going on in that game? Oh, that doesn't help us? All the starters, get out. Where's our rookie quarterback, our fifth-round draft pick? Get him in there, and let's see if he gets killed or not. I do love a lot of player prop bets. We will talk about that. I think the biggest bummer is that a little while ago, like, 12, 14, 18 hours ago, we were looking ahead to the next two games by the Leafs and the Toronto Raptors. And these were going to be some good measuring stick games. It was tonight the Raptors against Utah. Utah's one of the best teams in the NBA. They're kind of like the Maple Leafs a little bit. A lot of talent, great regular season. Actually, that's giving Leafs too much credit. Utah's had some kick-ass regular seasons. We're not here for that conversation. The point is Utah's a team that usually in the playoffs, they disappoint, so we ignore them. But in the regular season, they kick ass. Well, tonight, no one's playing. Like, literally, no one every player you know from the Mike Conleys, Bogdanovich, Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, all out, gone. Think of the Raptors roster against the Cavaliers. That's what Utah is tonight. So we've been robbed of this regular season excellence. Really get a sense, how good is this Toronto team? They've been kicking ass, and credit for them, they've taken on teams that have been depleted, and they've been winning and winning handedly. That is a good sign. But tonight, we'll have no idea. No gauge. Nothing at all. Then there's the Leafs taking on Colorado tomorrow. By the way, I was saying to my producer, hey, hot take. Maybe the Leafs are as good as Colorado. Leafs play in a harder division. They're around the same in terms of points percentage. Leafs got better goaltending. How the hell does Kadri have that many points after 29 games? Someone has got to keep me informed on this. But the bigger picture is great. We're going to see these two teams do battle. And my God, look what Colorado did the other day. They pantsed Winnipeg 7-1. All the stars on that team. And now we find out that Mitch Marner has been placed in the worst place you could be placed, COVID protocols. So we're not going to see him tonight, which means, hey, Nick Ritchie, let's see, how long has he got? He's got 56 minutes to clear waivers because, all those teams are just dying to claim him. But now Nick Ritchie, it's like, okay, no other team, no taxi squad, no AHL. You might be getting 8 to 11 minutes. But producer Austin, I'm sort of bummed out. Raptors, Utah. Wanted to assess it. Leafs, Colorado. Still can, but certainly losing Marner takes away from it a bit. I think fair to say this is a bit of a bummer, man.
Yeah, I'm super bummed out. I think as Toronto's biggest Utah Jazz fan, I was really looking forward to them coming in here and seeing if there was anything different this year. But it doesn't look like it'll be that way. And with Mitch Marner being out, that is a huge damper for a Saturday that I was really looking forward to. But I'm going to assume that everything works out, Matt, because it always does.
All right, I like that. By the way, I feel that there's something going on in the background, because you quickly got out of that answer with that cliche. And I have a follow-up question for my producer. If you are the number one Utah Jazz fan in Toronto, who's number two, and how close are they from you?
Yeah, it's a very small group. We have a weekly meeting. We meet under a church, about three of us. It's not
stale
much
coffee,
going on.
Bad donuts.
Yeah, a lot of that. And then we talk about Stockton Malone from the 90s and how hurt we were.
And then it's just 10 minutes of raging about Greg Ostertag. It's like, I'm going old school here. If Greg Ostertag was a B-minus level center, Utah wins one of those two titles over Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. Yes, audience, I knew you were, whoever had a Greg Ostertag reference in the first 5 minutes, you've won yourself a good amount of money. A lot to do. We'll do my confidence picks. We're packed with guests. Julia Teixeira is going to join us. Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley want to remind athletes, hey, you get booed. It's part of the business. But first, let's get to my opening thought.
Time now for Matt's opening thought.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
And here we go.
I mean, it's really nothing more than a self-absorbed monologue, a chance for Matt to rant about something and pretend he's a serious radio personality instead of a gas bag. Let's face it, he stole this idea from Dennis Miller.
Now, I don't want to get off on a rant here.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
We have got a crazy weekend coming. Only one seed has been figured out. Packers, number one in the NFC. Three playoff spots up for grabs. Two in the AFC between the Colts, Chargers, and Raiders, and one in the AFC, but in the NFC, excuse me, between the Saints and the 49ers. What will happen this weekend? I have no idea. Now, when I do my confidence picks, I have every idea, and they're all correct. But that's like in 2 hours from now. Do you know who's starting at quarterback for every team? Yeah, neither do I. So since I have no idea, here is what I would like to have happen beyond getting all my picks right. Now, let's start with the big game, the Sunday nighter, Raiders and Chargers. When I'm watching that game, in the moment, I'm going to be rooting for the Raiders to win. John Madden's widow will be there. There'll be a tribute to the great coach. It's a hell of a story for this team that is still alive after the John Gruden fiasco, the tragic story of Henry Ruggs. In a division where Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert are slinging it, the Raiders could actually make the playoffs. That is a hell of a story. But here's my question. What if they win? Then is Derek Carr in the playoffs? Yes, yeah, sorry, I don't want that. So in the moment, me is rooting for the story and the underdog. Playoff me wants the Chargers to beat the Raiders. The Chargers are the better team, at the very least in terms of talent. Not always in terms of how they play, but let's be honest. We all want Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Austin Eckler, Justin Herbert, Bosa, Derwin James. We all want them in the playoffs. I am rooting hard, super hard, for the Atlanta Falcons to beat the New Orleans Saints. I do not want the Saints and that offense in the show. I don't want Taysom Hill and novelty passing in the postseason. I don't want the announcers going, well, should we turn to Trevor Siemian? Ugh. I mean, I do for betting purposes. I want to bet all my money on the under and whoever the hell the Saints are playing. But not for the aesthetic. For aesthetic purposes, keep that team out of my life. Give me the 49ers in the playoffs. I get George Kittle. I get Deebo Samuel. I get Nick Bosa. Who knows what Trey Lance could do. Just give me the 49ers. I'm rooting for the Jags to beat the Colts because it's been talked about before, but if the Jags beat the Colts, then again, what the hell does that Sunday nighter look like? Because the Raiders and Chargers both get in with a tie. Do they do the honorable thing and give it their all? Or do the coaches meet at the 50-yard line and go, listen, do you want to get anyone hurt? I don't want to get anyone hurt. Okay, here's what we're going to do. 3 yards in a cloud of dust, maybe some kneel down, some screens. Don't pass rush. We're going to treat it like a Pro Bowl. Game ends in a tie. Maybe we'll see each other down the road. How fun would that be? That would just be so bizarre to see what that would look like on the field. How do they play? Who gets rested? What's the motivation? What goes on? I don't know. I'm confused. I want Kirk Cousins. He's back, baby. One of the top three most hated quarterbacks in football. Baker Mayfield might be there, but he's out. I want him to have a massive game in his return against the Bears. By the way, I'm so bummed out that Justin Fields isn't going to play. Guy hasn't had one good game all year. Kind of hoping to see him at least leave with a positive note. But anyway, here's what I want. I want Kirk Cousins. I want 5 touchdowns, and I want 400 yards. If he does that, he could end up with more passing yards than Dak Prescott and the same number of touchdowns as Aaron Rodgers. Why do I want this? Just to confuse everyone. Because sometimes we forget, and we go, oh, God, Kirk Cousins, can't win with that guy. That game sucks. And then you look at his numbers, like, holy Lord, those numbers are good. They're really good. They're elite. My brain is broken. What do I do? And then Viking fans are like, do we keep him? I'm here for that. I want the Giants to lose against Washington. Better for my draft pick. Plus, maybe if they lose and get blown out at home against Washington, everyone gets fired. The owners go, you know what, Mars, we've had a great run. We won Super Bowls in 86 and 90 and 2007 and 2010. It's time to walk away. Let's sell the team. Also, in that game, remember the fans a week earlier in that Washington home game against Philly? The fans who fell into the legs of Jalen Hurts when Hurts was leaving the field. They were just there on the edge, and then the barrier just came loose. I want those fans to go to Dan Snyder during the game and serve that man a subpoena. Jalen Hurts will fund the case along with all the other owners who want Snyder out. I want the fans to sue Dan Snyder for creating an unsafe work environment. Also, you can sue him for the fact that he haven't exactly been entertained over the last 20 years. I want the Cowboys to lose, but to lose because of their offense. Let Cowboy fans freak out about Dak Prescott. I want a whole week of everyone wondering, can you win with Dak? Give me that. Cooper Kupp, he goes off for 12 catches and 172 yards. Why 172? Well, 172 gives him 2,001 yards on the season. The 12 catches also breaks the reception record. So Cooper Kupp ends the year with the reception record, the receiving record. He also has the Triple Crown, which has only happened four times for NFL receivers. That's receptions, yards, and touchdowns. He gets three touchdowns, give him 18 on the season. Why do I want this from Cooper Kupp? Because I want a little more debate with our MVP talk. Aaron Rodgers has had plenty seasons better than what he's had this year. Why does it necessarily have to go to Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady? Give it to a receiver. Give it to Cooper Kupp. And if you don't give it to him, at least make it more difficult. And then let every writer come out there and announce who their pick's going to be. In fact, I'm going a new direction. Everyone hated Hub Arkish. I say Hub Arkish. Keep talking about it. Do you want everyone to love you? Tell who you're going to pick. Explain your reasoning behind the MVP. And if it's something personal against Aaron Rodgers, then lie about it and omit that part. But come out and say, I'm voting for Cooper Kupp. He's had the greatest year of receivers head since Jerry Rice in 1995 and Calvin Johnson when he set the receiving record. At the very least, don't make it just another coronation for the top quarterback. I want Derrick Henry to go nuts. Let's create a world where we actually believe the Titans can make it to the Super Bowl. Plus, let's give running backs some love. They get so little of it. In that same game, I want Davis Mills. You remember him, that rookie from Stanford, to have a monster game and scare the bejesus out of the Titans. Why do I want that? Because no one has any idea how to draft a quarterback. And imagine this, if Davis Mills, if his season is better than every other rookie quarterback not named Mac Jones, then what the hell do we do during the draft? In the end, I just want no player to get hurt. Let's get in the playoffs as healthy as possible. Let's bubble wrap every player. Please, no more players entering COVID protocols. Enjoy the weekend. Be careful about your bets. And here's hoping for a crazy Chargers-Raiders tie to end Week 18. Bleep it. You already had an extra week. Let's have the game go into overtime. Give us as much football as we can get. It's been a crazy season. Why not end with pure chaos? And that is my opening thought.
I'm finished.
I feel like I'm going to be doing a lot of yelling today about football there.
Ooh, great stuff, Matt. Yeah, I got the energy level up there. Really like that. Now, the Cooper Kupp thing, right? Let's dive into that a little bit. Do you think Matthew Stafford would want to beat Calvin Johnson's record that he set with Calvin Johnson? So that's where I kind of hesitate on that, because now I don't know if Calvin Johnson ate breakfast with Matthew Stafford the way Cooper Kupp does, but that could factor into some of the reasoning there a little bit. And I think MVP's over. I would look more towards Offensive Player of the Year between him and Jonathan Taylor if he can get that Triple Crown record.
No one cares about Offensive Player of the Year. We forget that's even a thing. As for this, I think Stafford even more so. Stafford is like, I'm the guy that got these two receivers to set the record. Also, Calvin Johnson, and I get why he did, it's the Lions, but Calvin Johnson did walk away in the peak of his powers. If you're Matt Stafford, you're like, you coward, you quitter. It's like, you left me with that franchise and that organization and those GMs and those owners and those coaches. So no, I think Matt Stafford even more so is going to be feeding Cooper Kupp.
But absolutely.
Yeah. But if Cooper Kupp sets all those records, it's like, but you're not a quarterback.
No, that is it.
That's
exactly
kind of what it comes down to.
Who would have been the last wide receiver to win MVP? I can look that up right now.
The last receiver to win MVP, I'm going to make a guess. Jerry Rice in 1987. I want you to look it up right now. The NFL MVP. I'm going to go Jerry Rice. Not in 1995, when I think he had one of his best statistical seasons, because that year it went to Brett Favre. And remember, Brett Favre won three straight MVPs playing outdoors when defenses could kick the crap out of quarterbacks and receivers playing against some dynasty teams against Dallas and the 49ers. So if you want to ask me why I think Brett Favre has had a better career than Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning, it's right there. And am I just doing this to buy my producer some time? You're damn right I am. I want to see if I'm right. And is that the last... Oh, yeah.
No, you bought him enough time. He had the answer. That is not the correct answer. Wide receiver has never, ever in the history of the NFL won MVP. A kicker has won. Lawrence Taylor has won as a defensive player, but a receiver has never won MVP. So, tough chance for Cooper Kupp.
LT won in 1986.
Yes, sir.
Mark Moseley was the kicker who won the MVP in 1982.
Yes,
sir. That was a strike-shortened season. So let's see, 198. Oh, this is such alienating the entire radio audience. Who would have won in the 1987 season? That was Washington beating Denver in the Super Bowl. That was Doug Williams. But the MVP, was it Elway? And who won it in 87?
One moment, I'll let you know.
Yeah. Give me that. I need that. And I apologize to the... We'll get in the next segment. We'll talk more about the Leafs and the Raptors. We got a ton of great bets for you. We got good Charles Barkley sound. And I'm going to start like just sprinkling in throughout the show. Player prop bets to win you money. Are you afraid of betting on an NFL game? Me too. But would I bet on a player who could get $1 million with one sack? Hell yes. So, producer Austin...
You are so good, yeah. My friend. Let me just say, 1987 MVP, John Elway. Second place?
Yeah!
Jerry Rice. So you were right on there. You almost had it. Just John Elway outdid it. Well, well done by you.
Thank you. I take way too much pride in this. I get sad. God, what a sad life when I'm taking this much joy. All right. On the other side of the show, you know what? Let's get to some interesting sound. Let's get to the interesting sound. So the Knicks... Beat the Celtics by Canada's own RJ Barrett hitting the last second shot. But in that game, the Knicks fans were booing New York. And then afterwards, Julius Randle basically told the fans to F off. Let's debate that for a little bit. That's coming up on the other side. You're listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. A little minor piece of news. DJ Wilson, the forward who signed that first 10-day contract with the Raptors and played pretty well. He signed another 10-day contract. He averaged 12-7, 2 assists, 2.5 steals in just over 23 minutes. And just two games in his first stint. But good to see there for Wilson, who represents one of the higher picks on the Toronto Raptors, being taken 17th overall. The Raptors are taking on the Utah Jazz tonight. And I don't know how you feel about this game. They're Utah Jazz fan, producer Austin. The Raptors are favored by 11. I'm going to take it. I'm going to take those 11 points. There's no one on Utah. And right now the Raptors are fully healthy. And for Nick Nurse, there's really no point of, like, I don't see as much limiting minutes because these guys haven't played together that much. So this is like high-end, this could be a high-end scrimmage. And as I say this, I'm sure I'm just cursing the team. But I like the Raptors to win. I like them to cover the 11 points, but I will take the under of 222. I don't see how Utah scores more than 90, 95 points at most.
Yeah, I can't believe the line swung that much because it opened at actually Jazz -3 and the total didn't drop as much because the total opened at 224. So I'm with you on the under. I'm not sure about the Raptors covering the 11-point deficit. I know the Jazz have absolutely no one, but this is the NBA. These guys are going to play hard. They're all good basketball players. Quinn Snyder's a very, very good coach, maybe underrated. I'm really showing my Utah bias right now. But I think that this game could be closer than people are thinking. I don't think the Jazz will win, but I don't necessarily think they'll be blown out either.
Here's the thing. We would say the same thing about Toronto. They'd play hard, and Nick Nurse is a great coach. They were down only by a couple in the first against Cleveland. Then they got blown out after that. I can't name you one member of the Utah Jazz playing tonight. Can you?
No, I'm just actually looking at the roster, and I'm it's looking That's really cheating. Tough. It's looking really yeah. tough, but I just think that I've seen this in my life with teams like the Spurs. These teams that have a kind of institution in place are able to play hard. They're able to get results, able to grind out close games. The Jazz don't really get blown out. Second best point differential in the NBA. I just don't know, Matt, about the 11.
I'm going to take it. I'm going to take the, you know, take that 11. I'm going to take the under. And you can keep that sound and get it ready for Monday. Speaking of which, let's do this real quick. Let's get a real quick. I was doing a couple NHL games last night. The favorites have been doing super good since the NBA or the NHL resumed. So how did I do?
Yes, I did.
So it is back-to-back for Pittsburgh. I don't care. I'll take them minus 227 on the money line. Hell, I'll even go back to that magical puck line, and I will take the puck line there, Conrad. Other one, Calgary-Tampa. Vasilevsky is back. Graydon Point's on fire. Andre Palat is scoring. Calgary, last time we saw them, they got dummied by an elite team in the Florida Panthers.
You like that? You like that?
And Kucherov to... Yeah, thank you. Well, I just take, they take some of these favorites, but taking it on the puck line. And like Vasilevsky... Just go look at Tampa's record and all the stats when Vasilevsky plays versus when he doesn't. 26 saves on 27 shots last night. Kucherov, 2 goals. And then on the other side, the Penguins. And the Flyers are reeling. The Penguins win 6-2. I think only 18 shots or 20 shots total by the Flyers last night. Byron Russ with 2 goals and assist. So just a dominant win by the Pittsburgh Penguins, who've now won like 10 in a row. And the Flyers, five in a row now they've lost?
Yeah, 5 in a row.
Matt, that's maybe
something you can ask Julia too, because something or nothing. Sure. Since the NHL returned on December 28th, favorites are 31-16. So that's something or nothing for you.
I feel if I ask her that question, she's like, I get enough of that from Al's brother.
I meant for you personally, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that she from 12 to 1 is just going to be, she's like, I deal with that and that guy all that time. So,
fair.
We'll see. But yeah, Julie Teixeira is going to join the show and just, you know, how disappointing is it? No Marner in the lineup tonight against Colorado. And I know Colorado is one of the three teams that is higher up in terms of betting to win the cup than the Maple Leafs. But who's really the better team? And it's Leafs Colorado. I think I said tonight, but that's tomorrow night. It's Raptors Utah tonight. So we'll look ahead and just get our general thoughts, big picture about the Maple Leafs. That's coming up in a moment. You are listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Kaws. Joining me now from Leafs Lunch, it is Julia Teixeira. Julia, thanks so much for joining the show today.
Anytime. Fresh off the lunch into an afternoon snack. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is like the best time to come on it because you're still coming down from the broadcast thing. So, you know, you've got like this energy still left to expel. So you might as well do it here on this show without Al's brother. By the way, we were talking before about like some player prop bets and some Stanley Cup futures. How into betting are you now because of Al's brother, or do you just glaze over when he's talking about the puck line in a Red Wings Wild game?
So to be completely honest with you, when I first started Leafs Lunch and when I first started hanging with Al's brother in general, whenever he talked about betting, it just go straight to elevator music in my brain. Like I just went right to elevator music. But now I'm kind of into it. I throw down little wagers every once in a while. I like the little ones, like little player, who's going to score, who's going to score first, things like that. I'm into it now, and I wasn't before this year. So we can give him credit for getting this gal on the betting train.
Nice, nice. That's good now, but 2 months from now, when you're sweating the under, you know, you're sweating the under in some random game, we'll readdress it then. To me, like, you know, I was never as into the Nick Ritchie story, but then the Mitch Marner one came down, and to me, the bummer of it all. And by the way, I loved how you worded it about how why did the Leafs mention Pierre Engvall first and then Mitch Marner? You know, it's like, really?
They're so good at bearing the lead on social media. I'm kind of a graphics nerd. I work in social too with the Bar Down team, so I always notice little details like that. And one thing I always notice with the Leafs social team, and God bless them for this, even if the Leafs lose, they put the winning number, like the larger number of goals, next to the Leafs player, even if they lose. So even though the graphic is giving you bad news, it still looks positive. Anyways, that's my nerdy take of the day.
Oh my God! Listen, I was excited. I named the 1987 NFL MVP.
Nice.
So listen,
nice.
Yeah, we're doing. There's a whole lot of nerd going on this show. But the bigger picture is I wanted Marner there because this is a nice sort of take the temperature. And I know Colorado, they're the far favorite to win the Stanley Cup over the Maple Leafs, and they had that big win over Winnipeg. But Toronto has basically the same sort of points percentage. And they beat them earlier, like 8-2, and Toronto plays in the harder division than Colorado. I was excited for this game, and it definitely takes it down a notch without Mitch Marner there.
Yeah, you said it. This could have been, and it still will be, a good temperature gauge kind of game. And you always look forward to seeing McKinnon go up against Matthews, two guys who in my head are kind of similar players. But Mitch Marner, I feel for Mitch Marner. Like, it's kind of been a tough year for him. Before he got that fluky injury, like, started with that fluky injury, you get injured by your teammate Jake Muzzin in practice. Like, that just, you can't get more unlucky than that. And right before that, he was kind of on a hot streak. But let's not forget, at the beginning of the season, the Leafs came out really slow, and the trade Marner crowd was getting loud again. It's just unfortunate. I really would love to see Mitch Marner have a good year this year, and he was showing signs of that right before he got injured. He was kind of quiet when he came back, and now all of a sudden he's on the COVID list. So really lame we won't get to see him tonight, especially after the Oilers game when we didn't get to see the McDavid-Matthews matchup. It's like, we can't have nice things. But at least there will be fans in the stands tonight, right?
Oh, yeah. And by the way, actually, let's go there. I was going to, you know, we can come back to Marner in a second. I did find that fascinating, just Sheldon Keefe coming out and saying it feels like a preseason vibe. And I feel bad for, like, hockey players are all about routine and normalcy and schedule. I nap now, I eat now, I do this now. And for the players to go from fans at the ACC to suddenly no fans, like, emotionally, they must be going through the bends just trying to figure that out.
Yeah, and not just that. So emotionally it's annoying, and it's just, like, not best case scenario. But I heard Dreger mention on Insider Trading last night, he brought up a really interesting point about how it might even be a competitive disadvantage for Canadian teams for a lot of reasons. Like, 1A, you never have a home crowd, right? That's the most obvious competitive disadvantage. 1B, players aren't super interested in coming to Canada right now because of the restrictions, and you can feel how you want to feel about the restrictions, but the fact of the matter is, a lot of guys aren't super interested in coming up here right now. And the third is the condensed schedule that the Canadian teams specifically are going to have. So as much as the no fans thing just looks like an eyesore to fans, I think it even goes deeper than that. And you're right about routine. Like, this morning my Bluetooth wasn't working. This is a hilarious example. I have a specific playlist that I listen to on the way to the office to do the Leafs Lunch show daily. And this morning, my Bluetooth was being weird, and I couldn't listen to my very specific playlist, Matt. And it just threw off my whole day. I can't imagine, like, taking a whole arena of people out of my game day equation.
Now, wait a minute. You're still in the lucky ones that gets to go to the office.
I'm literally the only person at TSN 1050, other than, of course, 20, and then our great producers. And in terms of on-air people, I think I'm the only one still going to the office.
How hard is it to get into the giant CTV building?
Oh, it's like Fort Knox. Like, it's tough right now. But I don't know. We maybe were laughing today because we sit on Zoom now, and instead of like looking at one another across the table and occasionally, you know, how we mute sometimes, we talk to one another, we plan our next move on the show. Now I've got him on Zoom. And today we had Chris Johnson on, and Chris Johnson is like just such a beauty, and he was so graceful in this moment. We have similar hand signals for wrapping a segment and for a follow-up question. And I gave the signal to wrap, and AB thought I had a follow-up, and it was just awkward.
I've heard
a little bit of a battle.
I've heard a couple 3-second pauses coming out of break, and it takes a while. Like, it absolutely takes a while just to get into that routine and that rhythm. And by the way, by the time you guys have got it figured out, you know, you'll be back in this, hopefully both back in the studio together. Going back to Mitch Marner for a second, like, if you were going to say the number one issue with the Leafs is blank, I would go with Marner. And it's not out of I'm super disappointed or anything of that with him, but he hasn't hit his ceiling. And for the Leafs to actually break through and do the thing they haven't done for a while, it's going to require all of them at their top level, like the core four. So if I'm going to look at the Leafs, and my biggest issue with the team right now, it might be Marner and the lack of production on the first power play.
I give Marner a little bit of a pass. And it's not even a lack of production, because actually, if you look at the stats, I saw that graphic, no goals, 99 games, or something crazy like that. But if you look at the power play points per 60 stats over the last over this season, rather, Mitch Marner is actually in the top five, and that's just as a result of him producing assists. So he's not producing goals on the power play, and I don't know if people will be in my Twitter mentions after this, but assists are 0.2,
yes,
leads to a goal, and
will,
he puts up a lot of those on the power play. So he's more of a setup guy in that scenario. For me, if I were to say the biggest, and I don't even want to say problem, because the Leafs are just, they're doing great right now. If I would say the biggest red flag to me about the Leafs, is that I still don't know if I trust that Hall-Muzzin pairing the same way that I did last year. And it's so vital to trust the pairing that was once the Leafs' top pairing that looks a little bit lackluster this year.
Yeah, I absolutely 100% agree that if it's not Marner, and I put Marner higher because his impact may be even more, but you're right. The Hall-Muzzin thing has been, I mean, it's definitely been a constant conversation just because of how well they played together last year. Going back to their opponent taking on Colorado, again, I'm joined by Julie Cesari from Leafs Lunch. Were you aware the Kadri's got 42 points in 27 games? Why has no one informed me of this? Like, I think because the last time these teams played, I was in South Africa, and I was a little busy trying to find my way home.
We were so occupied,
We've been occupied with South African wine and Air Canada flight changes, but I was unaware of just the numbers that Kadri is putting up. I'm just curious your thoughts about, I mean, a lot of that's him and just the town around him, but that's a remarkable year he's having.
Especially when you factor in, like, Nate McKinnon has 4 goals on the season, and the Avs have scored 50 goals in their last, like, 10 or so games, just something crazy like that. And a lot of that people are pointing at Nazem Kadri and saying, hey, where'd this guy come from? We saw, and he's got to be, like, I just had Luca Celebre, who's my buddy from Bar Down, and he's such a big Avs fan that he might as well be an Avs insider, honestly. He just knows everything in terms of the inner workings of that team. But Nazem Kadri has 30 assists on the season already. Like, that's a career high, and we're not even at the halfway point yet. He was a real heart and soul guy in Toronto. Like, the only time people really started to turn on Nazem Kadri in Toronto was when he got suspended for those couple playoffs in a row. And of course it happened again in Colorado too, but what a season for him so far. And if we're talking about guys who, I don't know, the true sense of the Hart Trophy guys, and that's the kind of a crazy thing to say, but guys who are the most valuable player to their respective team, like, Nazem Kadri's kind of been that for the Avs so far this season, and they've been through it with injuries, with COVID, and Nazem Kadri has been the guy for a really talented team this season. So I think that speaks to just how good he is and how good he's been this year.
All right, I'm looking it up. Colorado minus 132. This is just a win. We're not going to do puck lines or anything like that. Toronto plus 130. Where's Julia Teixeira going on the Leafs-Colorado game tomorrow night? No Mitch Marner in the lineup. These teams are fairly, you know, in terms of just talent and production this year, you can make a case either way. Where does Julia go for this game?
I'm taking the Leafs, and I'm also taking the over. I think it's going to be a high-scoring affair, especially with that 8-3 game that went down in Toronto a few weeks ago.
Love it. Julia Teixeira, you listen to her every day, Monday to Friday, 12 to 1, Leafs lunch. Thank you so much for joining the show. Enjoy the game. Enjoy the weekend. And by the way, because I listen, did you get some did you get some windshield wiper fluid in your car yet?
I can't confirm or deny that.
Oh,
I have
you did
everything.
It. You did it. It's snowing this morning.
I hope my dad's not listening. I got to be better with the car.
Where do you drive from? How far are you from Vic Park, from McCowan and the 401?
Downtown Toronto. It's like a quick whip up the DVC.
Okay. No. Then you're okay. Hopefully, hopefully the trip on the DVP is okay for you because of that accident from earlier. But take care. Enjoy the weekend and just go to a gas station. It's really easy. I'm a dummy and I can figure it out.
Okay. I can do that. That'll be my weekend project.
All right. That's you'll have plenty of free time after. Take care.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. That's Julia Teixeira from Leafs Lunch. All right. On the other side, let's play the sound. Julius Randle, star forward for the New York Knicks, told the home fans to F off. What did Barkley and Kenny Smith, what were their thoughts? You're going to want to hear it. That's coming up next right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Kaz. It is the Raptors taking on the Utah Jazz. And I want to ask you, producer Austin, before we get into this interesting sort of debate about what players should or should not have to be able to take from the home fans, I was reading in some of the previews for tonight's game that it was sort of intimated that Utah, they just don't have any interest in bringing some of their players up to Toronto for fears of COVID protocols, restrictions, and maybe making it difficult to get in and out of the country. I don't know, Austin, have you read any of that?
Yeah, I have read some of that, and I think the Clippers ran into that exact problem when they were here last weekend. So there is precedent.
Yeah, and okay, so, and like, we're not saying that they've come out and said we would, our players are healthy, they could have played, we're just scared to go to Canada, but at the very least, that could be the possibility. We're not saying it is, but it's certainly, like, it's been floated out there. Like, let me put it this way. If the Raptors were playing their home games in Buffalo, would Utah still have every player out for tonight's game?
No, I think Donovan Mitchell's playing if the Raptors are in Buffalo, because it seems like it's a maintenance night for him, and it doesn't seem like it seems like he could be sick, and it's just not worth it, because we saw with Ty Lue, he got stuck in a Toronto hotel for 5 days afterwards. It's just a whole mess for the team, and logistically, it's very, very tough already with border control, so I can't imagine quarantine controls as well.
Yeah, okay, so it's just something to keep in mind when you're looking at the over-unders and stuff, or if you're betting ahead, if you can bet on a Raptor game 3 days from now, and they're at home. I mean, my God, this could literally be the greatest home court advantage in the history of sport. And that's like literally, that is not an exaggeration. It's like, so, what's your home court advantage? Our crowd is loud. Oh, that's a good one. What about yours? You should see what our pregame routine is. The music, the fireworks, we intimidate. Oh, that's not bad. What about you, Toronto? What do you do? We scare the bleep out of every American team where they withhold every player and they bring a bunch of G League guys you've never heard of. And the line goes from us being the underdog to being favored by 11. That's what we got. Oh, what do you got? What do you got? You got rhythmic clapping? Well, that's pretty good. Oh, you got that New York crowd. Yeah, they got that salty language. Well, our home court, the star players are afraid to play. I got to tell you, Austin, feels to me a little bit better than in Seattle, where it's like, we got the 12th man here. Oh, it's so loud when your quarterback is trying to audible.
Yeah, would you rather play at Arrowhead at night or Toronto during COVID times? It's a great question.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
One place I think we won't have to worry about Kyrie Irving either, playing on the road, Toronto.
Yeah.
So, you know, a little benefit there against the Nets.
Oh, I could see it now. I could see it now, the Canadian government and all the medical people, and there's Ford and Trudeau, and they got like a net. They're like, oh, once Kyrie, the moment he steps into Pearson Airport, we're going to take him and throw him in the same hotel Matt was in for a couple days when he came home from South Africa. Anyway, so last night, the Knicks beat the Boston Celtics 108-105. And anyone who bet the money line on Boston was sure pissed when at the end of the game, R.J. Barrett hits a prayer of a shot, giving the Knicks the win. But the more interesting story is that during the game, and the Knicks were down by 15, 16 at the half, the home crowd was booing New York, and the Knicks have not had a good year. They a losing record on the season, a losing record at home, even after that home win last night. And afterwards, Julius Randle was yelling at the crowd and basically told him to shut up and to F, you know, just told him to F off. And the TNT crew had some thoughts on it. So let's start with Kenny Smith on the Julius Randle reaction to the home crowd.
And so, he shouldn't engage in the fans. He's too good a player. He's an NBA All-Star. He was probably the most improved player last year.
He was.
He doesn't have to engage with 19,000 people that really are there. Just, they really want to cheer him. They actually want to cheer him. But when they're not cheering and the Knicks are losing, everyone knows that is a city that's going to boo their team. They're not going to cheer them on. They know that they're going to do that. That's one of the cities. Philadelphia is another place. If you're playing bad, they're going to.
And then Charles Barkley, he weighed in as well.
I never understand why players think you're supposed to get cheered when you're playing bad. I've never, you're going to get booed when you're playing bad.
Even by your home team.
And you're going to get cheered when you win. This notion, it happened in baseball, a kid for the Mets this year.
No, it was Javi Baez and Francisco Lindor
and I'm like,
Kevin Pillar. Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, you're playing bad. Are they supposed to cheer when you're playing bad?
Or badly. And ownership took note of that, and then here came the apologies from a couple of those players.
But I don't understand, as a player, this is the way this thing works. We ain't doctors, we ain't lawyers. If you play good, people cheer you. If you play bad, people boo you. That's the deal you make with fans.
And let me go to my are you a millennial? What are you, Austin? You're at 25. Are you even below a millennial?
I am a millennial. I think the cutoff's 95. Okay. So I think I just squeak in there.
Okay, just get in there. Is this a generational thing? And it's not like Julius Randle. I mean, he's not that old, but he's not that young. But I wonder, is this a generational thing where maybe younger players just don't aren't going to handle? Wait. I'm not doing the, younger people are softer and more sensitive and a bunch of snowflakes and you didn't have it tough like I did back in my day when we had three channels or anything, which, by the way, was true. It's nothing like that. But I wonder if just this generation, if they just are going to have a different reaction to it. Because we are now seeing a bunch of these cases of athletes just openly going to the home crowd telling them to F off. And I agree with Barkley and Kenny. That's part of the deal. You know, that's always been part of the deal. That's why you get the money. And being in New York, when it's going good, it's better there than anywhere else. But that means there's going to be a trade-off. It's the thing about emotion. Emotion isn't logic. Emotion isn't always measured out properly. So when you get the super-duper highs, stands to reason there's going to be some lows. So that's sort of my, I agree with Barkley and Kenny Smith.
I think that with any player in any time in history, you would see if you get booed by your home fans, you have not a great reaction to that. I think we saw it in Toronto ourselves with Vince Carter when he was getting booed. I think we've seen it with goaltenders in Toronto when they're getting booed. They don't react particularly well to that. So I don't think this is a
necessary. You don't go after the fans. You don't go after the fans because you cannot win. You cannot win.
But when dudes like Vince Carter is saying, I'm not going to dunk anymore, who is he penalizing by saying that? He's penalizing the fans. Like, there is.
And by the way, Vince Carter was a suck. Like I'm sorry, but Vince Carter by the end
absolutely.
was a mopey suck. Like that's what he was. And listen, I feel bad for a player when they're getting booed by the home crowd, but there's sometimes when you've got to just have your indoor voice and you can't, you know, basically take two middle fingers and say F you to the crowd. I understand why you feel that. I understand why you would want to announce that. But if you're a player, you got to be able to control that because it's not going to do well for you.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, and that's literally what the money is for. Like, you are paid and compensated at such a high level because you have a higher burden of criticism that you have to, and you're more in the public eye. So, no, you make millions of dollars to play a sport, you're gonna get a little criticism, and you have to interpret that. Where I push back is that this is a new phenomenon that's, no, this has always happened. This is always, people never like being booed at home, right? And
they don't, how often
I guess they don't voice out the discontent to the
fans.
That's
my thing.
Yeah.
No, and that's my main thing, is they don't, usually you keep it quiet. Now we just had a bunch in the span of a couple months. Let's face it, come on, Austin, it's the young people. You guys are soft, you know, your helicopter parents telling you you're wonderful and none of you are allowed to fail and you get to pass every year and every kid gets a trophy and is wonderful. Not like back in my day, Buster, when it was 1983. We literally had three channels. Anyway, I'm just, how'd I do there, by the way?
No, that was good stuff. That's good. You got the blood flowing in me. I'm about to burst out and say, listen, old man, that's not how it, no. That's what the money's for. I completely agree with that, but I don't think this is a new thing that's just started with Javi Baez and Julius Randle. I think this is a thing that's been going on for a long time.
Here's one thing we can both agree on. Mark Sacchino is a jerk.
Absolutely.
Mark Sacchino, like, I want to give two middle fingers to him. Where's Mark Sacchino right now? I know the answer. Do you know where Mark Sacchino is right now?
I do, and I don't want to say it because it's a little chilly here. We got a really nasty wind.
He's in Hawaii.
He's in Hawaii.
He's in Hawaii. You know what? Because the PGA season has started. It always starts earlier than you think. And we'll talk big picture. We'll talk some bet. I want to throw some bets his way and all this sort of stuff. But I want to start here. How much do hockey media, how much do they hate golf media? Like, hockey media is, oh yeah, I'm going to Minnesota, then to Detroit, and, you know, after that, Buffalo and Pittsburgh. Versus golf media, I'm going to Hawaii, then California, and wherever it's hot enough to have golf events in February. Like, these
are
two.
Yeah, they're Maui next, too.
Oh my God. Bleep him. All right. Mark Sacchino and his horrible Twitter account joins us next.